Accession number 14925, Reel 4.
Mr. Jones, Reel 4.
They offered us food and drink and other home comforts, and a good time was had by all. I met a girl named Lulu there.
Is it allowed to ask you what she was like?
Well, Ghent is a French-speaking part of Belgium, so I could speak a bit of French, so we got on quite well. But the Germans still kept shelling the town of Ghent when we were there, and shells kept landing in the middle of the city. But the civilians still kept walking about. But eventually, Germans were driven off.
What condition did the people seem to be in? Well fed or not?
Quite good. Quite good, really. As a matter of fact, later on, this was said to me, and it surprised me. The Belgians said that they were better fed by the Germans than they were by the British. Because in the winter of 1944, there were shortages of food, particularly in Holland and in Belgium, and we could only give them a certain rations. But apparently the rations that the Germans gave them were better than what we gave them. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But by and large, they looked quite healthy.
And then after Ghent?
Well, it was just we went. We took part in the Arnhem attack. We were one of the supporting divisions because it was quite a large portion of Holland had to be liberated before you actually got to Arnhem. If one looks at the map, and we liberated the town of Eindhoven, I think it was Eindhoven, and we got us around Nijmegen. But of course, even though we had advanced towards Arnhem, the Germans were still, it's still possible for them to cut the corridor, as you say. And this is what happened. They cut the corridor a couple of times and we had to go and push them back to keep the route open. But of course, the remainder of that winter we spent in Holland, which is, the people are quite respectable and treated us quite well, but it's very wet, very flat, and a bit boring because it consists of nothing but dikes. And rivers.
Was the liberation of Eindhoven any different from the liberation of Ghent?
Well, they didn't make a lot of fuss about it. I know I spoke to somebody there, and they just took it as a matter of course. Really, they weren't dancing in the streets or anything like that. I think they were more interested in getting to work in the Philips factory, which is in Eindhoven.
Did you feel much sense of urgency about trying to get through to Arnhem?
Well, we and our unit didn't know the full story, of course, at the time. We did what we had to do, which was keep the flanks of the corridor covered, which we did, so that supplies could get forward to the troops who were approaching Arnhem. And we did that, and so did everybody else. But it was the last couple of miles, which the army weren't able to effectively break through. But of course, there's more to it than that.
What about the fighting after Arnhem? Was there any to be done then?
Yes, we had to push the Germans back to the rivers, the River Maas and the Waal, and we pushed them back to the Maas, and then we had to go over the Maas and push them, get over the German border. And we were the only troops who were on German territory in Christmas 1944. We were in a place called Weir. And in Christmas 1944, we were the only troops who were on German soil. And they did a broadcast on the BBC before the King's speech. Before the King's speech in Christmas 1944, they had an interview from our battalion headquarters. They interviewed one of our corporals.
Who was he?
Corporal Pass. Unfortunately, Corporal Pass was killed more or less in the last month of the war. But I think that was a great honour, that was for us. That Corporal Pass was interviewed as a veteran of North Africa, Italy and Normandy, etc. And he was interviewed before the King's speech. You can verify that from the BBC.
Why was he picked out?
Well, typical example of a fighting soldier, I suppose, really, in a rifle company. Been there from start to finish.
This is WWER, Weir?
WEHR. It's only a little village over the German border. I think the nearest Dutch town is Sittard. Sittard. But this little place called Weir, I was in the town. Battalion headquarters was in the town, and he went up a hill, and over the top, the other side of the hill, there was a Jerry's, you see. So we were, and the troops were up on the brow of the hill. Troops were up on the brow of the hill. Battalion headquarters was in the dip in the village, and there was another village. I can't think of the name of it now, Dongen. And we were there. And then later on, from there, from Christmas 1944, we did the crossing of the Rhine in March 45, and we went all through Germany. We took the surrender of Hamburg. Hamburg surrendered to us. Of course, in our battalion, we had an infamous person, Lieutenant Maxwell.
Did you get to know him very well?
I did, yeah.
Why did you get to know him so well?
Because I was in the order room, and he just joined us. I was about one of the first persons he met.
Can you describe him and any incidents that you recollect?
Well, one can only say he was a good, very good soldier. And he was, everything he did, he seemed to be a live wire, and he was, as I say, an excellent soldier. He was a remarkable scrounger. Whatever he did, he always seemed to come out on top. I mean, for example, you want an incident of what Maxwell would do. During the course of our campaigns, all the troops collected a lot of our enemy weapons, and the accidents were happening, people were shooting themselves, and the CO said all enemy weapons will be handed in and collected, which they were. And then he said, Maxwell, go and dump these in the River Elbe. But Maxwell didn't dump them in the River Elbe. He gave them to the Yanks. And the Yanks gave us a lorry load of gin. So the officers in the sergeant's mess were supplied with gin. All at Maxwell's initiative. He was remarkable for that sort of thing. They made him the battalion interpreter, and he was the first man into Hamburg and the first man into Berlin.
Did you like him?
Yes, he was very. He seemed very friendly.
Did you know anything about his background?
Well, I did personally, because I was one of the few who did know it. Well, being in the ordinary room, you see, you know what's going on. And the only people who knew were the CO, the adjutant, and myself, where we'd come from in Czechoslovakia.
So you knew from documentary sources rather than from his own spoken word.
Well, I knew what the CO had said, what the CO had told us verbally. It wasn't. I don't think it was written down anywhere. It was all verbal. What the CO told us. I think the CO had received a personal letter.
Did Maxwell himself tell you anything about himself?
Well, he only said he was from Czechoslovakia, that's all.
Did he say anything?
No. But he spoke perfect English. Perfect English, perfect German. But those people, and I see these people quite often, he was in A Company. They all say he was a first-class officer because he got the MC the first day he joined us.
Did you know about the circumstances under which he won it?
Yes. Well, we in the order room, we were the people who put forward these people, you know, for awards. It's put forward by the commanding officer. And more or less the first day he joined us, he was sent to A Company, who were going into the attack on a position in the Siegfried Line, and Maxwell had to take this platoon, and he took the platoon forward, and as a result of his actions, he was recommended, the position was taken, and he was recommended for the Military Cross, which he was awarded.
What did the men in his platoon think of him?
I thought he was very good.
What did Maxwell's attitude seem to be towards the enemy?
Hated him. Yeah, he hated him.
How did that show itself?
Well, he said, you know, he said so, I think.
Did you have any friction with him at any time?
No. No, well, I caught him out on something. something illegal, you see. See, I was in the order room. Now, all letters that come to us are addressed Officer Commanding 1st 5th Queens, right? Now, they come from mostly brigade, sometimes division, sometimes corps, sometimes army. The letters arrive. So, usually one of the clerks opens them, but sometimes I used to open them. We used to get a letter, and this letter had come from Schaaf, back in Paris, Officer Commanding 1st 5th Queens. This letter had come by special delivery. In other words, by a Don R, as they say.
Dispatch rider.
Come straight out. When you opened this letter, inside was another letter in blue paper, smelling of perfume. Lieutenant, Second Lieutenant R. Maxwell, first with Queens. So he used to send this letter to Maxwell's company. See, what was happening was his wife was writing a letter, was taking it into Chafe in Paris, right? And that was put in another letter, OC First Fifth Queens, special delivery all the way up the line. So I spoke to him about it, and he said, "Oh, don't worry about that." He said, "It's all right. It's all been cleared with Chafe. When I come across a bottle of whiskey, I'll let you have it." And of course, I never saw the bottle of whiskey. But that's what I think it was quite clever. That was.
So he was misusing army facilities for his own private purposes.
Yes, in a way. Yeah. Yeah. But you've got to admire the cheek of the person.
So you didn't shop him?
No. No. Because in actual fact, what was happening in the rest of the battalion, he was doing us a lot of good with the things that he was the sort of person who he used to say, "I'm going for a walk down the village." And he used to go for a walk down the village and come back with 3 bottles of cognac. See?
How do you think he got that?
He persuaded somebody. Because in those days he was very handsome and very persuasive. Anyway, as a result of all our actions in Germany, as I say, we took the surrender of Hamburg, and then we went up over the Kiel Canal, and we were on the Danish border when VE Day came. And after VE Day, we were honoured with the appointment that we were going to occupy Berlin. And in July 45, we took up our billets in Berlin, and later on we marched in front of Field Marshal Montgomery and Winston Churchill when they took the salute in Berlin in July 45.
How did the British troops get on with the Germans?
Very well.
In 45? But you were told not to fraternise with them.
But they did. They ignored it completely.
Did anybody get punished for ignoring it?
Well, never caught. Not in my battalion. The troops were. I think first of all they said you must not speak to the Germans. And he mustn't go in their houses, mustn't have anything to do with them. But of course people did not go, they did not speak to the Germans on the streets, they went into the houses and spoke. That's what happened. I don't know of anybody who was, I would have seen it if it had happened in my battalion. You know, I used to see everything that went on. Where there was sickness, you know, all postings and all happenings that happened in the battalion, I was aware of. Nobody was charged with fraternising with the German troops, although I knew for a fact that nearly all of them they had girlfriends. And they were going into the houses. And I think Field Marshal Montgomery issued these orders with his tongue in cheek. It's just to please the people in Britain.
Did you come across the Russians in Germany?
Yes. We were disappointed with the Russians. Because I don't know what it was, but in Berlin, or or in the surroundings around Berlin, they seem to be all Asians, half Chinese. They were not European Russians. They were, and they seemed to be very scruffy, and they appeared to be. They seemed to like the vodka a lot. I don't think it's true of all the Russians, but they seemed to. Didn't seem to have the same discipline as what we did.
What did you witness to indicate that?
Well, we were in Spandau, which is northwest of Berlin, on the outskirts. And bands of Russians used to come into our area and worry the civilians. So we instituted a standing patrol of a platoon, which is about 30 men, would stand by, and any night when if the Russians came into our area and caused a bit of trouble, our people would go out and stop it. Initially, we all had to carry rifles when we were in Berlin. We all carried rifles, which is unusual. But eventually, this stopped, and it was a bit. Things were a lot better, and we didn't have to carry rifles anymore.
Did you have any unpleasant incidents with the Russians?
I personally didn't know, although I saw some of them in Spandau, who were worse the way for drink. They seemed to drink a lot of vodka and drink too much of it.
Do you have any personal VE Day memory?
Well, VE Day, we were on the Danish border. And all I remember is that at VE Day, we had a bonfire and we let off a few flares and various things and had a bit of a drink. That's all. We were, as I say, we were right out in the country. We weren't in any town at all. Unfortunately, we'd left Hamburg, where incidentally, some of the boys had a good time in Hamburg, even though it was only one night, because they liberated the St. Pauli area, which is where all the naughty girls live.
What happened to them there?
Well, they couldn't find any of the men. They were all inside the places. D Company.
Any VJ Day memory?
No, not really. People were worried about whether they were going to go to Japan or not. That was the main worry, and they were pleased that they weren't.
Had you thought at any stage that Britain might lose the war?
Well, let's say this, that in 1940, when we were on our own, it was doubtful whether we would win it on our own. Shall we say that? It was doubtful. I couldn't see that in 1940, when we were on our own, that we would win the war on our own. But if we had allies, it might be a different story, which of course we did. We had allies, Russia and then United States, and then it was obvious numerically we should win the war.
But not winning is a slightly different thing from actually losing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think actually that Hitler lost the war 1940 when he failed to capture us at Dunkirk. If he'd captured us at Dunkirk, we might have been finished, but we weren't. But once we had allies, I was confident we would win.
What do you feel about nowadays that we hear so much about soldiers who have been in the Gulf War and so on being traumatised because of being in action and needing counselling?
Well, I'm sure that there are a lot of people that I know who've had experiences just as bad or even worse than what these soldiers are claiming, and I can't see it. When I think it's, I think quite frankly it's a load of nonsense. I know that people can get affected by shell fire and mortar fire, and but I think that if you're allowed to withdraw from the line and have a rest period, you can get over it. But as for these people claiming, I think it's just a scheme to try to get money out of the army.